Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
This is Dr. Michelle Cohen, and you are officially on the couch here on LA Talk Radio, as you always are on Fridays, 11 Pacific Standard Time in the morning, that is, and wherever you are at listening all over the world. Thank you for being here with us. You know, I've gotten a lot of emails from listeners from straighttalkdoc@gmail.com saying, why don't you talk a little bit more about coping with family members who have mental illnesses? A lot of the emails I receive from people who kind of reach out to me at the show here ask me certain things about their family members' disorders and how to cope with them. Well, everybody who did that, and all you other people out there listening who are interested in this, you're in luck today, because I'm talking about that particular subject. And as a matter of fact, a lot of patients talk to me about this every single day, which is how they're currently trying to cope with, or how they're still dealing with, unresolved feelings towards growing up with one or two parents or caregivers or other family members who have mental disorders, you know. And a lot of patients talk to me about their partners who have also been diagnosed with mental illnesses. So what I try to do is help them and tell them that, you know, there's a biological component to mental illnesses, and although it was extremely difficult growing up with a parent or both who had issues, a lot of times their parents and other family members, they know not what they do or did. And yes, you know, a lot of my patients' unresolved issues are probably the result of poor parenting. But probably many times their parents' behaviors couldn't have been prevented by anything that they did, or another family member did, or somebody else could have done. So even still, after a formal diagnosis is given to a family member, and, you know, we can say, aha, that's it. You know, we can define it. And that's why they're acting cruel or crazier, but it's still really difficult to sort of cope with that. Anyway, I just am sort of setting this up because I'm talking to an expert today. And he's a wonderful guest. He's just written an amazing book. If you want to learn more about mental illness, and also, you know, being brought up in a family who has, you know, disorders or some kind of mental illness, my special guest is psychiatrist Edward Hollowell, and we're going to be talking about his latest book, Because I Come from a Crazy Family: The Making of a Psychiatrist. Now, if you listeners out there have any questions or comments, if you'd like to email me, please feel free to do so. Emails come right here into the studio. I can check them out and answer your questions, or I'll leave that up to Dr. Hollowell. And the number, the email actually address is straighttalkdoc@gmail.com, straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. And of course, the phone number here live on the air is 323-203-0815, 323-203-0815. Now, let me just tell you a little bit about Dr. Hollowell. Edward Hollowell is the best-selling author of Driven to Distraction. I don't know if you heard about this, but you've got to check this one out. It's an amazing book. He's written more than 20 books on attention deficit disorder and emotional well-being in general. He's a leading authority on ADHD, a world-renowned speaker, the host of the podcast Distraction. That's a really good one, guys. And also the founder of the Hollowell Centers for Cognitive and Emotional Health. And he has them all open in Boston, New York, San Francisco, and Seattle, which is amazing. So let's bring him up on the air right now. Dr. Hollowell, thank you so much for being on the couch with me today.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
It's so nice to have you. What a great book. I really enjoyed reading through it. And
thank you.
Oh, no, it was what a story. You have such a great sense of humor, but also you address, you know, the subject very seriously. And I also love the way that you really help other people, family members and partners, whoever, friends, understand, you know, mental illness. But I really appreciate it. It's a good book. And also, guys, if you just tuned in, you can, if you're busy or you don't have time right now, you're driving in traffic, whatever you're doing, you can also listen to the show after we get off the air. It will be up in the archives. All of my shows are also on iTunes podcast. It's On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, and they're free podcasts, so check that out as well. So let's jump into it here, Dr. Hollowell. I know that in your book you say that in every interview, at every training program that you applied to during your fourth year of medical school, they ask you, why do you want to become a psychiatrist? That's kind of funny. So what was it that made you decide to do this kind of work?
Well, you know, that's the point where you're supposed to say, I'm interested in the mind or something like that.
Right.
And I would tell the truth. I would say, well, I want to become a psychiatrist because I come from a crazy family.
Oh.
And that's the truth.
Oh.
But that always stopped them dead in their tracks. They would look at me like, what?
Exactly.
And I would say, yes, that's the honest truth. My family was really crazy. And that's why I want to become a psychiatrist. I kind of like crazy people, but I'd also like to learn how to help them. You know, I wish my family could have received better help, and
yeah, sure.
I'd like to be able to provide that. So then that was really my driving force, my motivation.
Wow. No, that's funny. I mean, how did they respond when you said that? Was it kind of laughing, or was it, is he kidding?
Well, some of them just didn't know what to say. And
right.
And I tell the story in the book about one of them who just stared at me, and then
mm-hmm.
And he said, crazy? And I said, well, yes, crazy. And then I proceeded to tell the story of my father, who came back from, you know, my dad
yes.
had been a star hockey player at Harvard, All-American,
wow.
and married my mom, who the Boston Herald said was the prettiest girl in Boston. It was
Aww.
A storybook romance, and
right.
he graduated and was going to work at Goldman Sachs, and they had my two brothers, and the war came. My dad went off to, you know, join the war, as everyone did. And
right.
My dad was the captain of a destroyer escort and spent the war, you know, fighting German submarines in the North Atlantic. And when he came back, he went crazy. He became psychotic, and they diagnosed him as schizophrenic, which was the standard diagnosis
right.
you got if you became psychotic back
right.
then. So they put him in a mental hospital, and they began to give him shock treatments. And, and one weekend, they decided to give him a trial visit home, and they shouldn't have. Well, when he got home, he was still crazy, and he decided that he wanted to murder my mother.
Oh, no.
And she very artfully talked him into making love instead.
Wow.
And that's where I came from.
Oh, my
gosh. So I told this interviewer that story, and he,
right.
the poor guy, he just didn't know what to do. This was so much more information than he wanted.
TMI, right?
So I sort of talked him down from the
you're
ledge.
You're funny.
But I said to him, so do you see what I mean when I said crazy? I meant crazy. And we got talking about other safer topics like baseball.
Oh, there you go. That were how about those Giants, huh?
right, exactly.
So, you know, now I know your mom had some issues as well. Yeah.
Yeah, after my dad went back to the hospital
mm-hmm.
and the doctors told my mother that he could never be cured, which was a terrible thing for them to say, but
sure.
my mother took them at their word, and so she divorced my father. Meanwhile, a young doctor came along and said, let's reconsider this diagnosis and start this man on lithium, this new medication that had just come along.
Yes.
And lithium basically cured my father. And he spent the rest of his life teaching public school up in New Hampshire, specializing in kids who had trouble with learning.
Oh my goodness.
God bless him. Ironically enough, the very field that I went into. But the damage had been done.
Sure.
My mother had divorced my father, and then my mother proceeded to marry a very charming gentleman who seduced her and seduced me, too. I loved him at first.
I'm feeling narcissist here.
Yeah. Once he had us, he married my mother, and he then uprooted us from where we were, our home in Cape Cod and Chatham, and took us off to Charleston, South Carolina, where he became, his true self emerged, and he was an alcoholic and a sadistic kind of guy and abusive. And my mother became alcoholic right along with him. It was, it was done with style, but it was not a good place for me. And I witnessed, pretty terrible stuff. So that was, which I write about in the book. But, that was the darkest period of my life. And fortunately, my mother was smart enough to send me away. I was 10 years old, and she sent me off to a boarding school to get me out of there. Thank goodness. And my grandmother was able to pay for it. Now, tuitions back then in 1960 were pretty low. I doubt it cost much more than $1,000 a year for a boarding school. So but that really saved me getting me out of there.
Wow, that is amazing. I just flashed on. I loved it when you were mentioning just a little bit earlier, about how your mom sort of talked your dad out of killing her by seducing him, and that's where you came from. And what's so cool is, you came from the ability to negotiate. Your mom having that loving ability to negotiate and make things okay and all better, and here you go. There you are.
Yes.
By the way, in case you just tuned in here, you're on the couch with Dr. Michelle here on LA Talk Radio. My special guest, Edward Hollowell. Of course, he's a medical doctor and psychiatrist, best-selling author. He's written 20 books, and his latest is Because I Come From a Crazy Family, The Making of a Psychiatrist. Great read. It'll help you understand a lot about, coping with mental illness in your family. There is some humor in there, which, gosh, it sounds to me like, that helped you to get through a lot of, the suffering that you had to deal with. And was that one of your coping skills? And how did you
deal with that? Oh, my family was full of humor. They really were. There was just practical jokes were part and parcel. I mean, my brother set a bullfrog loose during my aunt's wedding, and suddenly there was this loud croaking noise during the service. That was standard fare. I mean, there was lots of joking and humor and irreverence. Nobody took anything terribly seriously. There was it was a fun-loving family. I talk about the WASP triad of alcoholism, mental illness, and politeness.
Yes,
but we were. It was also very irreverent, there was no pressure. I mean, nobody put any pressure on me to do anything. I mean, they had no idea what I would become one day. There was families, kids these days are under so much pressure. I was under zero pressure.
Right.
I was sent to boarding schools where I felt an internal desire to do well.
Sure.
Just because I wanted to sort of please these new parents that I acquired, the teachers that I had.
Sure, exactly. That makes a lot of sense. It really does. And thank God, again, your mom, was able to send you and have grandma help you out. And so that worked really well. So I'm really, I think humor does help, with our coping skills. So, you know, it's really normal for us to feel a range of powerful and unpleasant emotions, you know, growing up in a home with parents or a parent who has a serious mental disorder. How do we cope with some of those feelings towards the parent who made us feel that we were unloved or undeserving? You know, we didn't understand when we were kids that, you know, their chemical imbalance, I guess you might say, was...
Well, I never felt unloved, but I've certainly had patients who did. Mm. You know, certain mental illnesses in a parent can leave a child feeling completely unloved, completely rejected, completely... even unrecognized, and it's very, very hard for that child. I mean, you know, I think even the child who has a narcissistic parent can feel just not even known.
Sure.
And what the I think the best outcome for those kids is if they find it somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
If they find it, and that's really what boarding school did for me. I was able to, because I was able to find what I needed from teachers and and from friends.
Right.
You know, I think so. If you can't get exactly what you need at home, you know, try to find what you need in other places.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, and that's what you think you did. Or were able to do in order to cope with all of this chaos to become...
Oh, without doubt. Without doubt. There's no doubt about it. You know, there's a scale called the Adverse Childhood Experiences Scale. This is a study that, very well-established study. They identified 10 adverse childhood experiences, divorce, alcoholism, violent behavior, incarceration. There's 10 adverse childhood experiences.
Yes.
And if you suffered four or more,
right,
the chances of your having any kind of a decent life as an adult are very slim.
Mm-hmm.
The chances are very strong that you'll be depressed, suicidal, alcoholic, never have a relationship, never have a career. A score of four or higher.
Yes.
Well, my score is 8.
Oh, my
so
goodness.
So the fact that I'm, you know, the fact that I'm 68 years old, that I've been married 29 years, that I have three grown children, that I've written 20 books, that I've had a very successful career, I'm a statistical anomaly. I really beat astronomical odds. And the reason I was able to do that, not only survive, but thrive, to me is very clear. It was the power of human connection with teachers, friends, ideas, you know, connection to ideas. I felt a strong spiritual connection, connection to dogs. Dogs can, dogs can be tremendously powerful shapers of lives. And so it is in connection. And I think that's what the world right now needs tremendously. And one of the reasons I wrote this book was to just show the power of connection. I don't make it explicit in the book, but I show it, and I think the book is a living testament to the power, not only for me, but then in the lives of the patients that I depict in the second half of the book. You know, the force of connection in helping people as they you know, deal with their own struggles.
Exactly. And that's one of the reasons why I really enjoy your book as well, because, you know, you do point out certain cases, of course. The names have been changed. But, I mean, you do describe some of the situations and how you help them work through their own unresolved issues around coping with, you know, their own illnesses and, of course, dealing with their own, you know, parents or parent who had mental disorders, trying to understand and cope with that as well. In case you just tuned in, you're on the couch here with Dr. Michelle, folks, and I'm talking to Edward Hollowell. He's an MD and psychiatrist. He's author of his latest book. He's written 20, by the way. This is called Because I Come from a Crazy Family, The Making of a Psychiatrist. I think I said this at the beginning of the show, Dr. Hollowell, but do you think this is why you were so fascinated primarily? I mean, that's the premise of your book, why you became a psychiatrist. Because you wanted to figure out what the heck was going what the heck is all this about? And why are people ill? And what happens? And what's the chemical makeup? Is this primarily why you wrote this or decided to be a psychiatrist?
Yeah, I wasn't so interested in the why as the what to do about it.
Ah, I love that.
You know, I think the why is interesting and sort of an academic research question, and those are the Nobel Prize winners, you know. But I'm more the what to do about it. I'm more the doctor, the practical. I'm more the person who wants to fix it. I want to save families, save individuals.
Sure.
I want to make people better. I want to make people happier. I'm now sometimes you need to know why in order to do that.
Sure.
But oftentimes you can do that without knowing why.
Exactly.
And oftentimes you can help people without really understanding why they're not happy.
Sure.
It may sound paradoxical, but or may not make sense, but you know, you can help somebody by smiling at them.
Yes.
And you don't know why they're unhappy.
Yes.
But your smile helps them.
Yes, it does.
And people don't realize the power of a smile.
Mm.
You know, it's the power of connection.
So true.
You don't know what's going on in someone else's life.
Yes.
But you walk past them and smile.
Yes.
And you've helped them. And you know, there's an awful lot of unhappiness going on out there right now, and people need a smile. They need a pat on the back. They need an arm around them.
Yes, they do.
And a lot of people are kind of afraid to give that for various reasons.
Sure.
There's a lot of, you know, sort of prohibitions against connecting.
Right.
And you know, people are afraid they'll be sued. They'll be ridiculed. They'll be attacked, and so. The default position more and more is to hold back and to remain anonymous.
Yes.
And that's just, it's terrible. You know, the Surgeon General named loneliness as the number one medical problem in the country today. Loneliness, not heart disease, not diabetes, not obesity, not high blood pressure. Loneliness, number one medical problem in the country today.
Isn't that amazing?
The good news is that's instantly fixable.
Uh-huh.
Instantly.
Yes.
All you have to do is, you know, make a friend, and
that's
you know,
right.
Walk outside, go to church, go to synagogue, go to the gym, go to the library, strike up a conversation at Starbucks, you know.
Exactly.
And yet, that's awfully hard to do for an awful lot of people.
It sure is.
Go online, go to Tinder, go to Bumble. You know, there are dating sites.
Sure.
There are,
you
know, but don't live a virtual life. Don't just use Facebook and.
Yes.
Chat rooms and all that, you know, try to make it live, living human moments, not just electronic moments.
Right. You're so right. And, you know, there are so many ways, like you said, volunteering, and there's, you know, meetups, clubs, interests, things like that, and all over the world, actually. But, I mean, it's really easy to find online, and you get to choose. People get to sort of choose who they want to be with. But that is so amazing, that statement by the Surgeon General about the number one medical issue is loneliness. And of course, that is associated with longevity, our lifespan. I couldn't say
it is, absolutely. You know, social isolation has been linked to mortality.
Yes, it is.
You know, the loneliness means you die young.
Oh, my goodness, it's so true. And it's easy to sort of, as I say, stay in the cave for a lot of my patients. Did you get out of the cave this weekend? You know, what did you do? Did you go out and, you know, mingle?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So that's really true as well, and it is healthy. So can you share some of the stories about some of the most fascinating patients or interesting cases that you discuss in your book and how you sort of help them through their issue?
Well, you know, the so many people. I mean, some of the funniest stories, maybe the funniest stories weren't necessarily about people I helped, but just funny things that happened. I think of this the woman who came in when I was a medical student at Charity Hospital, which unfortunately Katrina destroyed. But there I was at Tulane in New Orleans, and the old Charity Hospital, the hospital that was just a wonderful place to learn medicine. And I was doing my OB rotation during the month of August, and all of a sudden the air conditioning went out. Well, New Orleans in August is just a tropical rainforest.
It is.
So there these poor women are, and in sweltering heat in middle of the night, this woman comes in to deliver her 14th baby. With no air conditioning, I'm assigned to her, and my goodness, that baby popped out pretty quickly.
Oh, wow.
And she didn't hardly need me there to do that, but I delivered it, and I said, it's a boy, and well, this was her 12th boy, and she said, honey, you know, you could help me with one thing, and I said, what's that? She said, I'm fresh out of names.
Oh, my goodness.
And I was, it's the middle of the night, and I'm sort of punch drunk and not thinking about what I'm saying, I said, how about Fenway Park? And she said, oh, that's a right classy name. And I said, no, ma'am, you don't want to name your son Fenway Park. That's the name of a baseball field in Boston. And she said, I don't care. I like that name, Fenway Park. I said, no, please. I was just kidding around. I didn't. You don't want to do that. That's a baseball field. She said, I don't care what it is. That's his name. He can change it when he gets older if he wants to, but I like that. It's a very classy name. So unless he's changed it somewhere in New Orleans, there's a Fenway P. Jones walking around. This is the wonderfulness of these people and the closeness that you get when you're learning medicine and the trust they put in me. I still remember that woman.
That's a lovely.
And then there
story.
Were there yeah. tragic moments. Yeah. where people die and you're doing your best and you have to come to terms with. Mm. Remember a woman came in with her husband. This is when I was an intern in the VA, and he was going to have his aortic valve replaced. They were recently married, and she was so looking forward to getting the surgery, and they're going to have a family. And that night, he was going to have the surgery. The next morning, his valve just blew, and
my gosh,
he was dead within seconds. I'll never forget because I was on duty and called for the code, and there was really nothing that could be done. Another story when I was a first year resident. One of the things I did is I tried to sort of interact as much as I could with the patients in the day room and tried to get, doing things instead of just sitting there smoking cigarettes. One of the things I did was we started a bridge club so I'm sitting there playing bridge with these people who had chronic illness, schizophrenic, and one of the other patients comes up and asks, can she borrow some money to go out side and buy a package of cigarettes, I in general we're not supposed to give money to patients, I said, well, I didn't have any money, but I said I did have a debit card and she could take that.
Oh no, you didn't.
And if she'd bring it back to me, so I gave her my debit card and my password, and
my
she
God.
Thanked me, and off she went, and the other patient said, are you out of your mind? She's crazy. We're all crazy here. You're not supposed to give crazy people your credit card.
Right.
All these patients were taking me to task for trusting her. And I said, well, she seems trustworthy. And they said, no, she's crazy. You can't do that. Sure enough, she came back, and she thanked me, and she gave me my debit card back, and she'd gotten her cigarettes, and the transaction was completed. And years later, when clozapine came on, which set a lot of people free, she got a lot better, and she wrote an article in one of the papers that the Chronically Mentally Ill put out, and she remembered that moment of my doing that for her, and what a turning point it was for her that I had enough trust to give her my credit card.
Aww.
Now, other people would have taken me to task, including supervisors, saying that was very inappropriate and reckless and I shouldn't have done it. And but that was the kind of thing that I would do. And one of the reasons I liked training at Mass Mental, where I trained, was there were enough supervisors who would encourage that, would encourage innovation and trying things that, you know, most people would say you shouldn't do that. It's a boundary violation, and you're crossing a line. And
that's right.
And yet, you know, I knew that with my father when he was in the hospital, I would have wanted someone to do that for him, I think. And I also knew that I've learned that people will rise to the level that you allow them to. And because another time I took a group of patients who others wouldn't have dared to do this with. I took them to Fenway Park to a baseball game.
Right.
And they did great. In fact, one of the most severely impaired patients ended up explaining the rules of baseball to a group of Japanese people who were visiting.
Wow.
And this guy barely ever spoke. and at the ball game, he was in full fluency explaining the rules of baseball to these Japanese visitors.
That is cool.
You know, so again, you discover that people can rise to the level you allow them to rise to. So these are the kinds of things that you know, that I learned in training.
Oh, that's lovely. What a great story. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. That's beautiful. You know, you'd mentioned, you know, the medications that have helped people, and what I hear, you know, all the time and in the media, especially living here in California, as we say, there's this whole, you know, thing against big pharma. You know, I don't want pharma. I don't want to do meds. I don't believe in it. I don't want to. But you're having fearful thoughts. I need to refer you to a psychiatrist. You're having paranoia. You're doing things that your family is afraid. And, you know, nope, don't want to take meds. They've really changed people's lives. I mean, since, my goodness, over the decades, you know, of finding medications that really help, you know, certain disorders, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, major depressive, certain anxiety disorders. I mean, it's really been phenomenal, hasn't it? I mean, I think it's positive.
The medication revolutionized the field completely.
Yeah.
On the other hand, you can overdo it and think that medication is the only solution. And that's certainly not true. I mean, I think connection is still the most powerful intervention we've got, and we don't use it enough. So medication is wonderful when it's used properly.
Yep.
But, you know, you can overdo it as well.
Sure, absolutely. And of course, people know about side effects and certain things to expect. And, you know, sometimes it takes a while for certain individuals who, you know, have bipolar or other disorders to find the right, as we say, cocktail. to find the right mixture of medications that will be of benefit to them. But thank God they are out there. And like you said, many of your patients who were they were very ill mentally because of these medications began functioning, began their lives, and are doing creative things and giving to society. So that's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, in your book, I also appreciate how you talk about many of the words that psychiatrists use and how they're overly weighed towards sickness and pathology. And why do you feel this way?
Well, I just think the whole field is too slanted toward pathology. And it's obvious why. I mean, it's medicine, and medicine is about pathology. You know, that's where the study of disease, where the study of illness. You don't go to the doctor because you feel so good.
Mm-hmm.
You go to the doctor because you feel sick. So, you know, what we learn in medical school is pathology. We learn about sickness. We learn about disease and illness and how to treat it. But the thing about when it comes to the mind, One of the best ways to treat the mind is to encourage the healthy part of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we in who study the mind really need to focus on health if we want to drive out illness. Now, you can argue that's also true of the rest of the body, but my interest is in the mind, you know, I think if we would spend more time encouraging and finding talent and searching out the healthy part of a person,
yes,
we could do a lot toward getting rid of the damaged parts.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of
yes.
analyzing the damaged parts,
yes.
you know, if we could encourage the growth of the healthy parts,
mm-hmm.
the damaged parts could sort of just wither away.
Yes, that's beautiful. That's a wonderful technique. You know, I always try to bring out the best and, you know, have my patients, you know, find what their gifts are. You know,
yeah.
what are you good at? What do you enjoy?
Yeah.
What, it doesn't yeah. matter what yeah. it is. There's no judgment. What did you enjoy as a child? You know, what
right.
brings you joy today? Can you explore
right.
that? Can you explore that
right.
more? And, you know, just building faith within the individual and, of course, growing from, you know, the issues that they had, getting away from
right.
that and learning more about themselves and really embracing a little more self-esteem and faith in themselves. So that's a real important thing, I think, as well. And if you just tuned in, guys, you're on the couch here with Dr. Michelle, talking to Dr. Edward Hollowell. He's a psychiatrist, author of his latest book. It's called Because I Come from a Crazy Family, The Making of a Psychiatrist. So I know you treat many illnesses, but you are a specialist in ADHD. You're a leading authority, as a matter of fact. So what was it that made you decide to find, you found the Hollowell Centers for Cognitive and Emotional Health in Boston, New York, San Francisco, and Seattle. What was it about the ADHD illness that made you want to become an expert?
Well, mainly because I have it myself. I have both ADHD and dyslexia.
Oh,
but then also because I think it's vastly misunderstood. You know, I think this is a condition that is so overly pathologized, and I think there's a tremendous upside to it. You know,
right.
that most entrepreneurs have it. The current CEO of AOL and mm-hmm. Yahoo has it. The man
yes.
who founded JetBlue has it.
Yes.
Most entrepreneurs have it, and mm-hmm. and the way we tell these poor kids, you know, you have ADD, we tell them this as if we're telling them they're stupid, you know,
right,
and
exactly.
nothing could be further from the truth. So, you know, I tell them, I say, you're very lucky. You've got a Ferrari engine for a brain with bicycle brakes, and I'm a brake specialist. And as soon as we strengthen your brakes, you're going to be a champion. So I wanted to get in it to sort of change the emphasis from a disorder to a trait. You know, you've got a trait, and now if you don't take it seriously, it can ruin your life, and that's for sure. Undealt with ADHD can be a terrible, terrible curse. It can
yes.
be horrible.
Yes.
But if you learn how to deal with it, then it can make your life great. It can
yes.
take you to the heights. The advantages of having this are tremendous if you learn how to manage it properly. But, you know, and that's what I do. I tell people I don't treat disabilities. I help people learn how to unwrap their gifts.
Oh.
I help them learn how to manage the condition that they've got. And so I went into it to, number one, because I have it, but number two, mm-hmm. because I think I understood it in a different way than the standard orthodox approach to it.
Oh, man. Thank you for sharing that and being so open about it. And I know you do in your book, which it's just amazing. Do you suppose that because of the formation of the mind or what's going on with the ADD or ADHD individual, that, I mean, is it they are brilliant because they've learned how to function around this particular disorder, or is it just
no? I think it's the basic makeup of ADHD. If you look at the core triad of symptoms, what Russ Barkley calls the Holy Trinity of ADD: distractibility, impulsivity, and hyperactivity or restlessness.
Mm-hmm.
Turn each one of those on its head and look at the positive you get. The flip side of distractibility is curiosity. Curiosity is an element of genius. You can't teach curiosity.
Right.
Curiosity leads to the discovery of penicillin. You know, and curiosity is what drives most scientific breakthroughs.
Yes.
This driving innate curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
Impulsivity, oh, it's so bad, right? Well, tell me, what is creativity but impulsivity gone right? You don't plan to have a creative idea. They burst. They pop spontaneously, impulsively.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You don't say it's 2 o'clock, time for my creative idea, and lay it like an egg. They
right.
happen impulsively, spontaneously.
No, exactly.
And then hyperactivity, you get to be my age, I'm 68, it's called energy, you know? And
right.
so those three so-called negative symptoms, you turn them on their head, and there are elements of tremendous genius, creativity, and productivity.
Yes. No, that's beautiful. I love that. So it is treatable. What do you think about all these theories about where ADHD or ADD has come from? These, we've had too many immunizations growing up, and, you know, sort of all of these.
Well, it's definitely not that.
Yeah.
That's absolute poppycock. But,
I agree.
It's probably several sources, genetics, environmental stresses, mm-hmm. you know, too much electronics. I think it's the usual story, a combination of genetics and environment. Head injuries can certainly contribute to it. The immunization stuff is absolute nonsense. It's promoted by,
I agree.
Just people who are, trying to grind an axe and
right.
polemicist. But the other,
exactly.
it's almost always the combination of genetics and environment.
And it's always been here. It's always been around. It's always existed. It's just that we...
Right, right. It's nothing new. I mean,
right.
you can go way back and find accounts of people who were particularly distractible, impulsive, and restless.
Yeah, exactly. I hear you. And that's... It's really important for people to understand that and read that, because I'm finding that patients I see who are so-called millennials who are deciding to have children, they're saying, well, I don't want my child to have, because they're not well-informed.
Right.
ADD or ADHD or autism or whatever.
Right.
I'm not going to give them the full immunization schedule that this state requires. It's like, excuse me.
Oh, man, that's just so...
yeah.
irresponsible.
Oh,
that's
I know.
Just so, yeah.
It's iffy for me, to say the least, because it's very difficult. But I, I'm glad I chat with their physicians and have the authority to do so. So, my question to you also, because what I loved about your book is there are many funny and humorous moments, and the way you look at growing up with your family who, has had mental illness, primarily your dad, and some of the things that he's, gone through and that you had to suffer through and observe,
mm-hmm.
and your mom as well. One of the most difficult things I find is trying to help people find compassion and go back to love and forgiveness towards parents who have, hurt them. And of course, as children,
mm-hmm.
we feel it, we're ego-based. We feel something I did wrong. I'm not lovable.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. how do you, mm-hmm. besides encourage them to use role models to help them with social understanding, how do you encourage them to sort of understand what's going on here and that it's not about them?
Yeah, it's hard, but you try to let them grieve the loss of what they didn't get, and hopefully
yeah.
they found it somewhere else,
mm-hmm.
And then realize that it's in no way anything to do with what they did or didn't do,
mm-hmm.
And yet it's almost impossible not to in some way take it personally. I wish my dad hadn't gone crazy. I wish that, and
yeah.
I don't suppose I'll ever not wish that. But
sure.
I don't carry it around with me consciously every day at all.
Right.
And I loved my dad, and I knew that he wasn't able to be the full person he was before he went crazy.
Sure.
But he was able to be a beloved school teacher.
And, yes, he was.
And that was pretty wonderful.
Yes, he was, and that's amazing. It's about educating people and helping them understand, you know, what's going on with a particular disorder. And then again, it's not the parents' fault. Really not. They just don't know what they're doing. I keep sort of going back. I have this visual about your dad going out completely naked, wearing his shoes. I think he had his boots on.
Galoshes.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
And shooting at the crows because he thought they were not Nazis. Is that
right?
Oh my gosh.
Exactly. Yep.
Oh dear. Yeah. That, you know, it's kind of like, huh? You,
yeah.
How old were you then, Dr. Hollowell?
Oh, no, that was after he made love to my mother and conceived me.
Oh.
And he got up out of bed and he went out and started shooting Nazis, i.e. crows, right? And then the poor police were called and they didn't dare disarm him. Here he was a war hero with a shotgun.
It was
out of his mind. So my mother walked out, now pregnant with me, and
God bless you,
disarmed him. Yeah.
Well, you know, he defocused from mom onto the crows, the Nazis.
Yeah.
Oh, that's an amazing story, and your book again is wonderful. What is the best way listeners can find out more about you and your centers? And also,
go to my website, which is drhallowell.com, drhallowell.com, no period, just drhallowell.com.
Mm-hmm.
And get the book, go to Amazon, because I come from a crazy family, Amazon or any of the other online booksellers. And it should be in bookstores now.
Great.
Go to my podcast, Distraction. It's the name of the podcast on iTunes.
It's really good, guys.
I'd love to hear from anybody if they want to contact me. I'd love to hear after you read the book. And you can email me. It's drhallowell@gmail.com.
Perfect.
I'd really love to hear from any of you listening.
Great. That's wonderful. Well, thank you so much for being on the show today. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me.
It's
a real pleasure
much.
Talking to you.
Oh, thank you. And again, the show will be up in the archive. So if any of you guys out there tuned in a little bit late, you can, of course, listen to the rerun, download the show tomorrow, and also on my iTunes podcast as well. All right, Dr. Holloway, take good care and have a wonderful weekend. And thanks again for being on the show.
Thanks so much. Okay. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. All right, guys, again, if you would like to get the book, of course, you can log on to my webpage here on LA Talk Radio, and we're going to give you Dr. Hollowell's email and also his website, drhollowell.com, so how you can get in touch with him and get a hold of his book and find out more. And also, you can also read his 20 other books that he's written that are amazing. And if you have anyone in your family who's dealing with ADHD or ADD, he is a specialist. So you can get a lot of information, you know, on that particular issue as well. Guys, thank you so much for listening today. I sure appreciate it. We'll be back next week with another fabulous guest and author. And we're talking about coping with your own unresolved issues. So, little tease there. All right, thanks for being on the couch. Have a good weekend. Do take care of yourselves first, and then you'll be great for others. That's the way it works here. Bye-bye now.